Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Joy Now, Transpositions, a safe place for trans communities, our friends and our allies to share our experiences. We'll discuss our issues, our challenges and our successes. We'll occasionally make you cry and hopefully we'll educate and inspire you. Welcome to Transpositions on Joy 94.9.
You are on Transpositions on Joy 94.9, and I am Kurt, and I'm your host for this evening for the next hour. In the studio with me is Michelle, my lovely co-host. Hi, Michelle.
Hello, Kurt.
And we've also got Megan in the studio, and Megan's going to give us a little update on what's been going on in the trans communities later.
Absolutely. Hello, everyone. How are you tonight?
And a very special guest, last but not least, we've got Terry Tinsel in the studio with us tonight. How are you, Terry?
I'm very well, thank you.
It's lovely to have you here. Now, Terry, we're interested in getting to know your story tonight because you sort of briefly... You basically gave me a sentence summing up your life story, and I want you to elaborate. So, you did say in there that you grew up in King's Cross.
Yeah, well, my mother was a photographic model. She was too short to be catwalk. And my father worked in an industrial company called AWA. I don't think they make anything anymore. I think they still make traffic lights. But other than that, no. And he'd drive an MG sports car, and my grandmother didn't like him, thought he wasn't fit to marry my mother, rather. And we moved out to a place called Cornell in Sydney, which is like if you make Frankston in Melbourne, which is Cronulla, then you go out another 20 miles, which is Cornell, and that's where I grew up. And my father was offered a job by NASA to go across and train in America to help put the first man on the moon, because they needed this part of the country down here, because radio waves travel straight or something like that. They needed the curvature of the moon, blah, blah, blah. And my mother didn't like being left alone. She was diabetic. She hit the grog, became an alcoholic. And she was always shooting herself up with too much insulin, and I'd have to try and stuff down glucagon down her throat to get her from coming out of a coma. And I really thought, I'm over this. So about the age of 10, 11 or 12, I'm not too sure, I just thought, I'm over it. So I left and I called the train to the city, and I started walking, and I thought, King's Cross. So I walked up to King's Cross, walked around for a while, didn't see anybody, and I came across these two other boys, and they said hi, and they seemed really friendly and everything, and they said, what do you ask? Well, I ran away from home, and I couldn't really care less. And they said, well, you want to come and live with us? And I said, well, where do you live? And they said, we squat in a house in Victoria Street. And I said, okay, I'll do that. And we had no money or anything, and we used to go down and get from the market cabbage leaves and that kind of stuff and live on all that. And at that time, King's Cross was run by two people, Jimmy Anderson and Abe Saffron, and you had to decide who you were working for. And one day we were sitting on the Alamein Fountain, Wayne and I, and these hoons, we call them hoons because they always had little white ties and black and white shoes, came up and said, do you want to work as a gopher for Jimmy Anderson? They said, oh yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, okay. So we worked as gophers on and off for a long time, and as you work yourself up in the ranks, being run by the gangsters. You met lots of people, and also I met Jimmy Anderson's wife, which I'll call Christy, because I don't want to say her real name. And Wanda and I used to sit here and look at her in fascination some nights and think, why does she always wear that black suit and that diamante brooch? Doesn't she have anything else? And we were so stupid, we didn't realise the suit was Chanel and the diamonds were real. We were just so dumb. And anyway, all the prostitutes, the girls downstairs and the girls that were on, and the girls was below the VIP lounge, and everyone mixed together. The prostitutes looked amazing, beautiful sequin gowns, all this goddamn hair and everything. I was always fascinated by them. And the Pink Panther, which is one of the clubs run by Jimmy Anderson, used to get acts from America. And we used to all sit and talk together. So I'm getting Ruth through this really fast. And she said, you know, Terry, Michael at the time. Everyone knows now, everyone Michael. Knows. And I said, have you ever thought about being a stripper? And I looked at her and I said, are you stupid? And she said, no, you know, you're small enough. And with the right look, you could probably get away with it. And I said, do you think so? She said, oh, I could train you. And in those days, you never took your G-string off, and you never took anything off, completely off. You had pasties. And she said, come to the toilet room, let me look at your chest. And I didn't have much hair on my chest. She said, oh, you're very well-developed muscular in the chest. She said, I can make those up, and they're really good fake boobs on you. And she said, you can have some of my old costumes, and you have to take them up. So she trained me. So I did rehearsals at the Pink Panther. And the guy said, oh, her skin doesn't light very well because I'm freckled. I'm half, you know, Irish and half Spanish. And he said, I got a trick. So they use bright red lighting on with UV lighting, and the two together suddenly turned my skin into this most beautiful tan colour. And I thought, oh, this is pretty cool. And so I worked there for a stripper, and as I was working there, I kind of worked up the ranks of the Jimmy Anderson fold people. And I was just sitting there one night, and I was walking out of the Pink Panther one night, just to show you how much power Jimmy Anderson had. And I said goodbye to the sprue, because I said, hi, bye. Bye, guys. Because you looked at the roster, and there was about 30 girls working, and you did it by every 15 minutes, and you knew you'd have an hour and a half that you'd have to kill, and then you should sit there. And every time I walked out of the Pink Panther, there was this detective on the other side of the road waiting for me that used to give me intense grief. So I was there one night, and he griefed me out, and I walked across the road and walked up the VIP lounge feeling really tortured. And Jimmy Anderson happened to walk in the room at the same time. He was an incredible man that could remember everyone's names that ever worked for him. And he said, what's wrong, Terry? And you'd like to be called Daddy. And I winged over and I pulled the curtains across and I said, Daddy, see that guy down there? And I pointed to him. He said, yeah. I said, he gives me so much grief. He said, don't worry about it. Tomorrow night he was gone.
What? Gone?
Gone. Gone.
Gone.
Gone.
Gone where?
Anyway, so I don't know where he went.
On a holiday.
He was just gone. So anyway, as I worked up and the girl said, look, you better get on the hormones very quickly or you're going to lose your boyish looks, which pass for a woman now. And I said, well, what should I do? She said, well, start taking hormones. I said, well... She said, well, there's a hormone called Stabestrol. And I said, oh, yeah. And she said, oh, it was made by Bayer in 1945 by the Germans or something. And she said, start taking that and we'll do wonders for you. Well, talk about fucking hormone sickness, the nausea. It was dreadful, the nausea. You know, they say about Kate, Princess Williams, and her nausea could never be as bad as what mine was. And they said, well, if you can't take it that way, shoot it up. I said, well, where do I get all that from? They said, well, go around to Blake's Pharmacy. They'll sell it to you, and I'll sell the needles, because they had no disposable needles then. So I bought this ampoule, about a set of 10 ampoules, and a glass syringe. So I used to boil up the syringe, snap the ampoule open, and they're intramuscular oil. Mm. So I used to get a milk bottle hello, milk bottles then, not cartons. And I used to push the milk bottle against my rib cage and push it into my arm, then wipe it with a swab. And the gauge of the needle was really thick, because wide, I mean, or dimensionally wide, because it was a syrupy substance.
Very thick.
Very thick. Mm. And I'd load the syringe up, and I'd get the milk bottle and push it so the muscle would come up in the top of my arm. And I go, fing, and throw the needle in, squeeze it in like that. So pressure was so hard, it's going into the muscle like that. And then pull it out, and then quickly put my finger on it. And had to rub it around for 5 minutes, because if I took my finger out, it would just squirt straight back out. Mm. So that kind of bypassed the liver. And then as I got better and better, Jimmy Anderson decided to open a drag show in Bondi Beach called Gilligan's. And we were down there one night shutting up the club at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was Christy, Jillian, his wife. There was the manager, which was quite short, another drag queen, very taller than me. Now, first time in my life, thank God I was short. Right through machine gun, someone fired like a semi-automatic gun through the front door. And this is what King's Cross was like. And I don't think it was a machine gun, but it was one of those rapid firing things. And it doesn't sound like a sound that you hear on movies, like bang, 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 bang. It's kind of like a dead pop, pop, pop. And it kicked back and it fired diagonally. So the first round went through the manager's kneecaps. The second round went through Christie's productive organs. The third round missed me because I was short. The third round went to the other drag queen's head, wig.
Not a head.
Okay.
It was a very big wig.
Yeah. So then that's when the King's Cross drama really started, and the fighting started, the fire bombings. All the little hoons had guns behind. They had always carried guns. Everyone carried guns. And I thought, oh, it's getting a bit hard. I'm not really feel that too crash hot here. And they were doing a call for lay girls in Melbourne. And Jimmy Anderson liked to have headshots of everyone, from the prostitutes to the strippers to all the female impersonators. Then, which we'd be trainees now, which you call us transgenders, whatever. Who cares? Who gives a rat's ass personally? I don't care what I'm called. But my headshot was sent down to a guy called Donnie Williams that was opening Lay Girls in Melbourne in Fitzroy Street in 1973. And he went, this one's got a good head. This one's got a good head. This one's got a good head. And he flicked it over to look at my height, my hair colour, my dimensions and everything like that. And it said 5'3". And he thought, oh, there must have been a mistake. She must be 6'3". So I was flown down and I met him. And he took one look at me and thought, can I say the F word or not? And he thought, fuck me. She's so short. What will we do with this one? And I'm kind of thinking, oh. So I had the first 2 years where I just stood with a petal dress on and a headdress where everyone danced around me. That's all I did.
I thought everyone would have liked you being short, because exactly. You look fantastic.
They didn't.
Anyway, Terry, I'm interested to hear a lot more about King's Cross. You are on Transpositions on Joy 94.9, and you're with Kurt, Michelle and Megan, and our very special guest tonight, Terry Tinsel. Now, Terry is a trans woman, and we were talking to Terry about her growing up in King's Cross. And Terry, I was wondering how old you were when you did start the hormones.
About 14.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
How fantastic is that, transitioning that young? That's really cool.
You could just walk down to the local chemist and just buy a syringe.
You could buy everything you wanted. Yeah. It didn't matter then.
Mm.
But when I worked at Lay Girls, and look, he had seething hatred for me from the minute he saw me to the minute I tried to leave. When my contract expired, he came after me with a gun and said, you're not fucking leaving us. And I said, oh, yes, I am. And I'm going down the street to Jan Hillier that was running the first kind of gay place called Pokies in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But it started in 1975 as a straight venue called Bellboys, and on Sunday night it transformed into Pokies. And then they weren't really concerned about my... They were concerned about, one, your talent, two, your looks, if you could reasonably dance, which all the girls at Pokies couldn't dance. They mocked the Croctor, as we called it in those days. The boys would dance. Renee Scott, if anyone can remember her, she was trained as a ballroom dancer. The rest of us weren't. We had to just learn it all. And I started there, and we're doing these kind of girly feathered shows and everything, and I'm thinking, these are all gay men. I thought, they're not liking this. And I said to Jan one day, I said, can I ever go out producing a show, Jan? I said, I think I'd be really good at it. And I said, I want to do this show called Women of the 80s. And everyone that's older out there, probably over 50, would remember this. And she said, go ahead and do it. And I said, well, you're not going to be really happy with what I want to do. She said, no. She said, I'll do it. I'll trust you. She said, how much money do you want to invest in it? I said, I reckon I could do it for 20 grand. Well, after she, I picked her up, and she said, Terry Tinsel talks telephone numbers when she talks drag shows, you know. And I said, well, we're going to do it completely different. For a start, we're not going to look anything like women. I said, we'll still have the tits, and we'll still have the figures. I said, but we're going to be lizards. Well, she looked at me like I was a loon and said, lizards. I said, yeah, lizards. So the first part of the costume was made, and it was made as calico, and we were squeezed in so tight to give us our figures, and the zips we would, and the costume dresses had to squeeze us together. Then we laid there for 4 hours while the costumers went over us with more calico, scrunching it all up to look like scaly skin, and then painting it all murky colours like vomit green and yellow and awful purple and all these colours, and the headdresses were added like reptilian lizards, and we had these great big legs on and leg pieces on and great big hands on and everything. And the set people painted, of course we had no what do you call flies to go into the roof. We had to work out a way to make the look like an airlock opening. So they said, oh, we can do it with a roller blind and we can paint the airlock on that. And I said, oh, that sounds pretty cool. Yeah, let's do it like that. And in those days, you've got to remember, if for people that don't know, that are young out there, that don't know what reel-to-reel tape was, it's tape on a big reel from a big reel. And for people that don't know how you edited in those days, there were no computers to do it. You just pulled out a jumper take on a piece of tape onto a breadboard with a razor blade and went cut and then stitched together. If the cut worked, it worked. And usually you kind of got clunk or some light, which was acceptable in the 80s. Nowadays people go, oh my God, what a dreadful edit that was. But, you know, it worked. And I said, the opening's going to be Prince's 1991. She said, what? It's not women's doing it. I said, no, it's men. It's a man's voice. And I said, we're not going to mime either. And she said, oh, I don't know about this show. I said, Jan, it'll be great. So I was very into sound. I said, do you think we could have stereo? Because in those days, drag shows never had stereo. And she said, well, the sound's rented. I can check out. And I said, do you think we could have bass sub drivers? Which for people out there that don't know what that is, that's bass sound. So we ended up with bass that was in the floor. And we had middles and we had rings, which give you the top notes, left and right. And we rehearsed the shows to Ghetto Blasters. And I was very big into these huge overtures, mainly from movies, and sound effects. And they were very hard to get. You usually pull them out of movies. And I looked everywhere for this sound that had this sound like I'm going to imitate it, like a submarine sound, like a klaxon, like... that kind of sound.
Very nice.
And also the sound of air escaping, like compression. And I couldn't find any sound effect except for air brakes on a truck. I said, oh, that'll do. So we used that, and then we had these mole phasers, which are these bright red lights, and a lot of smoke machines going behind us, and two fans going with the two stage hands with the all this junk into it. And then we only ever rehearsed the Ghetto Blasters. And then when the overture started, I said, hit the sound and make it loud. And he turned on the overture started, and I thought, oh my God, the sound sounds amazing. That sounds like we're at some goddamn nightclub. Drag shows never sounded like this. And
that's all they are now.
Then it went, and then you heard this compression sound, and then the airlock opened up, and it was bright light behind us. We were in silhouette. And then they tipped all this shit into the fans, and it all blew out into the audience as we stepped through in slow motion.
How fantastic.
And then all the male dancers were hanging off the roof. Right, in balaclavas, this is the 80s, in balaclavas, G-strings, backless, asses showing, and boots up to their thighs with all spikes in them. That came down to greet us. Well, Jan had this look of horror on her face. And when we finished the number, there was no clapping. And I thought, fuck, this has died in its ass and I've created the biggest bomb. But the show kept going, as it does. And then we went to do this kind of box number where we worked out with this lighting effect. It gave the illusion that the box revolved, but it really didn't, and each person did a spot number. And then we came out, and then at the end, all the five spot numbers were edited together, and we all did the same things, and it was all a blur of words and music. And Jen said, this is a lot of shit, I don't understand what this is about, during rehearsals. And I said, look, it's all new things for these gay people. They'll love it, they'll love it, they'll love it, they'll love it. And and they turned out they did. And then in the end, we did this big wedding finale where Doug Lucas, that was the MC of the show, was the mother of the bride and handed out everything. And we all walked down the aisle in big wedding dresses and everything. We had these great big bouquets and everything like that. And then in the end of it, just there were only 400 people in the audience. They all stood up and applauded. And we just stood there dumbfounded, and I thought, I've got a wiener, I've got a wiener, I've got a wiener.
Is that really and all that was going through your head right then?
Next week, 1,400 people showed up, including Truth Newspaper, saying, how dare they do this? How dare they have transvestites dressed up as brides? It's disgusting and immoral.
Yeah, we're talking about the Truth Newspaper here.
Yes.
That's fantastic, Terry. That's such a good story. I actually want you to, after the break, I want you to tell me about your story about Wanda, because that was an interesting one you briefly spoke about before. You are on Transpositions on Joy 94.9, and that was Against Me, a True Trans Soul Rebel. I got it right that time.
You did, actually. Good boy. I'm proud of you. The actual reason why we actually play that song is because AOL Originals are actually broadcasting at the moment on their website new documentary, which Laura Joan Grace, who's actually the lead singer of Against Me, actually hosting at the moment. So I think from memory there's about 4 episodes which have been released so far. My understanding is about 10 episodes which are going to be put out over the next short amount of time. So it's actually really interesting. I've watched a couple of the episodes and they're really, really good. They go for about 6 or 7 minutes each, but it's actually so well produced. It's so clean and cut, and it's really informative for those who are actually in the trans community, and lots of different people actually talk about their stories. So if you get the chance, it's worthwhile taking a look. And also on our Facebook page, I've also put a link to the first episode. So if you get the chance, take a look at our Facebook page, Transpositions 94.9, and there'll be a link there which will take you through to the first episode. So do it. Do it.
I love the way you do it.
Absolutely do it. It's always good to become a Joy member. So absolutely, guys.
Just throw it in there. Become a Joy member.
Become a Joy member.
joy.org.au.
Absolutely. Happy, joy, joy.
Keep supporting us. And Michelle, you've got something. You've got something to turn back to Terry, because we're going to talk to Terry more definitely. Now, because Terry, we love your story.
Yes. And Terry, we were talking earlier and asking you about Wanda. Can you tell us a bit more about Wanda?
Well, Wanda, I can't be evil and say what a boy's name was. She worked at Lay Girls when it became there's about four generations of Lay Girls.
Can you tell us a bit more about, like, where did Lay Girls come from? What was, like, the original?
It was original thing done by Sammy Lee.
Mm-hmm.
That he'd been to Vegas, and there was a place in King's Cross, even before my time, called the Jewel Box, where a lot of, I think Carlo's movie touched on the Jewel Box, but from none of it was really factual, in my opinion anyway. And he thought, wouldn't this be a really great idea to have men dressed as women entertaining? He said, but they've got to be really good looking and really pass very well. So he handpicked them out, and the generations came and went, and Wanda was one of them. And she worked with her partner, John. Oh, shit, I've said his name. and they went to, they did everywhere, and they ended up living in the country. I'm not going to say where the suburb is in the country, but it's outside of Horsham. And they've been on together for 35 years as partners, which is pretty cool considering. And she said to me one day, she said, do you want to come up and work with me? I said, what? She said, just two spot numbers. And I said, well, what do you want? She said, just Google 50 most possible spot numbers loved by women, go down the list, pick two, do them. I said, it's that simple. She said, yeah. And she said, there's tons of costumes and you can have some of them, because all my costumes belong to pokies, never went away with anything. And I came up there and worked in the hotel on a wooden floor against a window with a ghetto blaster with a kangaroo spotlight. I thought, there goes all the glamour. But I left with quite a bit of money and thought, oh, well, this is okay. I'll do this.
Well, you were saying earlier something about how you went from stripping to drag, and how drag was actually paid a lot more, and as a trans woman, you could easily just do...
Well, look, in those days, I don't think I really knew what I was. Right. I think all I knew is, as a woman, I can make more money, and I think it's much more convenient to live as a woman than it was as a man, and because I'm short and only 5'3", and I can get away with it, so why not live it?
I'm jealous.
And so, no, I've always wanted to be 5'9". It's a bane of my life being tiny. And
I'll trade you. You can at least get shoes, honey. I can't even get shoes.
I was going to say, actually, I'm 5'9", so.
I hate all of you.
And that was what the psychiatrists really were amazed about, too, because when I was really young, I only ever played with trucks and kind of building Meccano sets, and I never used lipstick, and I never put women's dresses on, and I never put shoes on. So the psychiatrists, that I saw quite a few to get the transition to the sex change, they said, you are completely untypical of transsexuals, as you don't have an atypical profile.
I think that's the difficulty with a lot of things, yeah.
Anyway, they started doing these tests on them, and these goddamn inkblot things. I don't know what they represent or what they're supposed to mean. What's this one look like? I said, bat. What's this one look like? Bunch of flowers. What's this one look like? Two people fucking. What's this one look like? Oh, this. And then they'd hold up a blank piece. And what's this? I said, it's a blank piece of paper. They said, well, what's about it? I said, well, it's a blank piece of paper. They said, well, tell us about it. And I said, well, it's a blank piece of paper, and it's made from paper, and the paper comes from wood, and wood grows in the ground, and they come from forests. I said, okay. So then they did another test where they had these pages and pages of tests where you answered yes or no to. And every 10 or 20 pages there was, do you believe in God, or do you suffer from constipation? They constantly came up all the time. And I'm going, yes, no, yes, yes, no, yes, 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 no, no, yes, 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 yes. And then he asked me at the time, he said, you know the big Coca-Cola sign in Swanson Street? I said, yeah, the big one on the wall. He said, yes. He said, Terry, how many patents does it have in it? I said, well, as a matter of fact, it has 15. Willingly, he fell off the floor in shock. And he said, that was a completely unusual question, and you shouldn't have known that. You knew it. I said, well, the only reason I knew it is because I used to strip in one of the cinemas in Swanson Street, and I used to wait for the number 8 tram for Turek on the way home, And the while waiting for the tram, I used to count the patterns on the Coca-Cola signs.
Wow.
And it did 15 patterns. That's how I know it.
Determine whether you were trans, if you believe in God, constipated, and how many
Sorry, I'm constipated here.
Yeah. I'm vegan.
And shoes. Both him and the female doctor, which I won't say their names now, they're both passed away anyway. No, the professor hasn't. He's about 80, I think.
Hold your tongue, Terry.
And they always looked at your shoes. And one day when I went in for a revision, because my vagina just wasn't big enough, and I said, look, I'm over it. If it doesn't work, it's useless. The men can't get it in. It's what's the use of having it? It's got to be work or it's not working. So I said, fix it. So she said, all right, Terry, I'll go down to the doctor right away. I said, and Mrs. Sansa, I said, why do you always look at my shoes? And she looked as butch as they come. She used to roll her own cigarettes and she'd open this drawer and she'd always turn on the tape recorder. And I knew everything about her. And by the end of it, she knew more what was going on than what we did, you know. She said, if you look bad in drag, if you look like a truck driver, you ain't going to get a sex change and that's it. So that was it. And I said, why do you look at shoes? And she said, you can tell everything about a person by their shoes. Oh. I said, really? She said, yeah. She said, haven't you heard the saying called well-heeled? I said, yeah, I have heard that saying. She said, yeah. She said, we always look at shoes. You can tell a lot by what shoes people wear.
Hmm.
I said, oh, how fascinating is that?
Well-heeled.
Yeah, how fascinating is that?
Now, Terry, after the break, I do want you to tell us about your little run-in with Dusty Springfield.
Oh, that's a trip, that one.
That's fantastic.
A lot of people will freak out about that one.
You're on Transpositions on Joy 94.9. You're speaking. This is Michelle with Kurt, Megan, and our guest, Terry Tinsel.
And now, Terry, before that lovely song that Michelle chose for us, which was Katy Perry, Firework, this is turning into a bit of a camp show. Chris on panel came up to me and said, people might think you're gay, Kurt, Katy Perry.
No, Kurt, you're straight. Sorry, you're straight.
No, that was for my biggest three fans, so.
Yeah. Katy Perry's gorgeous anyway. Terry, now, before our lovely song, I asked you about Dusty Springfield because you said that you had a little... you met her and...
Yeah, I did, actually.
And chatted to her.
When I left the Pink Panther and worked as a waitress, Dusty Springfield walked into the restaurant one night in full drag. I call it drag because she'd just come off stage. Huge hair pieces that works. And she never once exposed her cleavage. Very well dressed, always fully clothed, even on stage. And then she was having an affair with the cook, which was chef. And the next night she came in without a drag on, and I nearly fainted. All she had was this huge fringe and short back and sides. Everything was stuck on her head. And I started to talk to her, and she always had a hot chocolate. And I got to know after about 4 or 5 days, she said, you know, Terry, you're doing your makeup all wrong. And I thought, what? I've got a little bit of Mary Quant lavender on. I think I look fabulous. And she said, no, your eyes are too piggish and small for that. And I said, oh, what do I do? She said, I will show you. And I said, oh, yeah, sure. And next night she came in with a makeup bag. And she said, come into the kitchen under fluorescent lighting. And in the kitchen, it took about 45 minutes. She completely redid and revamped my eye makeup. And she put false eyelashes on me. And I took one look in the mirror and thought, fuck, that's how I'm supposed to look. That's it.
Of that story.
Thank you, Dusty. That's awesome. That is such a cool story, Terry. Love it. Michelle, did you have any
I was going to say, I'm moments like that with my makeup going, fuck, that's how I'm supposed to look. Awesome.
Well, it's like eyelashes make a hell of a difference. It's like,
and
do you want to
should I go on how I had to change? Like, I lived a quarter of my life, I think, in drag, and I thought, how should I end to keep my life going, you know? And I thought, well, do I really want to get old as a little old man? Or do I want to live out the rest of my life and get old as a woman? And I thought, well, there's no obvious choice, really. It's going to be a woman for me. And I've never had formal education. I was taught manners and how to speak correctly and everything by Jimmy Anderson's wife. She used to give lessons because we used to have to entertain the R&R. If you get my drift, the R&R.
Mm-hmm.
More ways than one. And so anyway, I had my sex change in the Queen Victoria, which has now been pulled down, in the famous Ward 306, I think it was.
Why was it famous?
Because that's where everyone had them done there. Right. And the war was renowned for it, and that's where everyone had their changes. It was done in two sessions in 2 days over a fortnight. There was a lot of aggro and there was a lot of nasty hostility towards me, even then, towards having the change. I got a bit of grief by two orderlies at one time when they lifted me off the thing to take me to the second part of my operation. They ripped me and tore my leg, and I said to the doctor, and he said, "We get a lot of that." He said, "Don't worry about it." He said, "I'll fix you up during the operation. Just ignore it." And I think the only other time it freaked me out was they were worried about me, oxygen content or something. And also the people that came and saw me, they just fainted. There was people showing up with roses. My hairdresser came, washed my hair, blow waved it, did everything. I was sitting up there like Joe with a pink nighty on and everything. And when everyone came to visit me, they just pointed and said, "In there." Like that, like it was such a tremendous thing. And I started to suffer from lack of oxygen or something. They put me in the nurse's station. And one night I was laying there and I kind of went from reality to unreality, really. And this guy came from under my bed with a great big knife and went rip right into my guts. And went down, I screamed, and they came out and said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Someone run the bed." And I looked down, there was nothing. They said, "Terry, you're hallucinating, you're on morphine." I said, "Oh, it was so for real." It freaked me out. They said, "No, no, love, just don't worry about it. Oh, you're off, you're fine. No. Just don't worry about it at all."
Terry, I tell you, it's amazing just hearing your story. It's just a colourful history that you have, starting from the beginning to where you are now and everything.
I was 14 when I got in drag, by the way.
It's 14. Amazing. Yeah, and you look amazing, by the way. Through everything you've been through, like, just some of the stuff you, like the gunfire and the R&R and,
you know, just, like, well, in King's Cross you took it all in your stride, you know, because you're always protected by the little baby hoons that followed you around.
But through all of this, would you do anything different?
I'd do everything all the same again. I would not regret one thing that I've done in my life.
Amazing.
At all.
Absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely amazing. It is. In other words.
Yeah. Oh, gorgeous. Beautiful. Yeah. Terry, it's been fantastic.
Well, thank you for having me and letting me tell you my story, which is slightly different from other people's, I'm sure, but
slightly,
that's how
just
things
slightly.
Are.
Yeah. You also do have a few more little things that you didn't tell us that I'm interested in actually hearing.
Oh, here we go. What love?
Well, not tonight, because we have actually run out of time tonight, unfortunately. But Terry, if you're keen on coming back, then we should be in contact. And maybe I could have you and your best friend Amanda on together.
Oh dear, the terrible duo.
That would be terrible.
Terrible too, yes.
I think actually...
You know she missed that plane for Bangkok.
She did.
Poor Amanda.
Poor Amanda. She's got iPads, she's got computers to tell her what to do, she's got automatic phones, she's got to make this, and she missed the plane.
Still in Melbourne, stuck in Melbourne, Amanda.
That's right.
Not
Happy Jan. If anyone's interested in hearing Amanda's episode with us on Transpositions, you can find the podcast on the Joy website, joy.org.au, and there are other podcasts there now, thanks to Andrea. She's updated it, so there's new ones. Yay. joy.org.au, and you can send us emails during the week, transpositions@joy.org.au. And Megan, you have put a few links up on the Facebook page.
Yes, so there's actually a few links up there on the webpage, on the Facebook page. So I put them up while we were talking earlier on. So feel free to take a look, guys, and click away.
Excellent. You're on Transpositions on Joy 94.9, and we have come to the end of the show tonight with our very special guest, Terry Tinsel, and my lovely co-hosts, Megan and Michelle, tonight. Now, Terry, it's been fantastic having you on. We have discussed possibly you coming back, if you're keen on it. And Megan, did you want to let everyone know something?
The only thing I was going to sort of say is if tonight's discussions has brought up any personal issues for you, please don't hesitate to contact support. So there is a gay and lesbian switchboard which you can contact on 03 9663 2939, or switchboard.org.au. There's also Lifeline on 13 11 14, or lifeline.org.au. You can also reach out to as well.
That's right. It is important to get support if you feel that you need it. Thank you tonight to Michelle, Megan, Chris on panel, and guest Terry Tinsel tonight. Podcasts available from the Joy website, joy.org.au, and check out our new Instagram page. We will post a link to it on our Facebook page in a few minutes. Go for it, Michelle.
But there's also our app on the iTunes store, which is look up Joy 94.9, and you can get a link to the website. You can listen to the podcasts. You can also listen live over the of your device
on your smartphone or iPad. Yeah, exactly. So that app's actually really awesome and handy. Yeah, it's good for on the train as well. thank you, everyone, tonight. You have been listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9. Tune in next week. We will speak to you then.
You've been listening to Transpositions. We love your feedback. And if you want to share your own story, email us during the week, transpositions@joy.org.au, or contact us via social media. You'll find all the links at joy.org.au/transpositions. Thank you for listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.